with me for a couple minutes in John chapter 14 once again. John 14, verses 13 and 14. And then I'll have you look at several points of reference supporting our notion tonight without opinion, and with very little commentary. I think the scripture is quite sufficient in this regard. Last week, we looked at verse 13, which reads this way, "And whatsoever you shall ask in my name, that will I do, that the Father may be glorified in the Son. If you shall ask anything in my name, I will do it." Very clear, forthright statement of the Lord himself. Last week, we took notice of the text here of prayerful exertion in the words, "You shall ask," how very important it is for us to ask. In that line of thought, Matthew 7, verse 7 is where I'd like to have you look. There are three things there that underscore the asking. Three words and three results in Matthew 7, verse 7. That brings us to the second point of our notions here in John 14, a prayerful expectation. And I remember sometimes I would be chastised by my father verbally, being fussed up about different things, and he would come to me and say, "If you needed that, why didn't you just ask me?" And I just said to him, "Well, I didn't think you would listen to me, so I didn't bother asking." Sometimes I think maybe Christian people fall off the prayer wagon and reduce their asking because they're not quite convinced, even in spite of what the scripture says, that God is hearing, much less will respond. Now, Matthew 7, verse 7, there are three words there: ask, seek, and find. And the three results are what? Without any commentary, you ask, and what's the verse say? And if you seek, find, and if you knock, okay. Those are the words of scripture. Prayerful expectation, but you've got to exert. You've got to ask. You've got to ask. And with all that's involved in Matthew 7 and verse 7, it underscores what we find right here in these two verses where expectation is concerned. I'll have you note again in verse 13, "Whatsoever you shall ask in my name, that will I do." And the next verse, he reiterates, "If you shall ask anything in my name, I will do it." That's a reasonable expectation, only reasonable because of who said it. He never says anything trivial, and he never says anything that he does not intend fully to respond to. Now, there are several other points of interest here. Turn over the page into John 15 for a minute. John 15. And verse number 7. Great passage of scripture. Verse 7 says, "If you abide in me." Now there are qualifiers here related to prayerful expectation. And this is a qualifier. If you abide in me and my words, important is the word. And my words abide in you. You shall ask what ye will, and the expectation is, it shall be done unto you. It shall. There's no equivocation there. It shall. But the qualifier is, if you abide in me and my words abide in you, it shall be. Then there is also in the 16th verse, I believe, same chapter, "You have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. Now, the way that's phrased there at the end of verse number 16 might open the door in some people's minds as maybe he will, maybe he won't, but that's not at all the sense of what we have there. The statement has an air of absoluteness and certainty to it. Whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. Now, there is a couple of other places over in John chapter 16, for example, verse 23 and 24. Verse 23 and verse 24. In that day, verse 23, you shall ask me nothing. Verily, verily, I say unto you, whatsoever you shall ask the Father in my name. Please notice now how the English is changed around here, which basically sheds light on the verse previous. He will give it you. Hitherto have you asked nothing in my name. Ask. There's the exertion. And you shall receive. There's the expectation. You shall receive, that your joy may be full. When I think about this, I am reminded of something, and I want to be very careful that I don't leap off into a sermonette here. But as I look around, I'm impressed with the truth that the church, generally speaking, ours, our association, the Western Association, and the PARBC, like-minded brothers across this great country, north to south, are about to be engulfed in the storm winds of compromise. Sort of like a wall or a tsunami of worldliness that's about to engulf the church. And there's some reasons for that, and there's where I don't want to go to at this point. And as I was thinking about that, I happened to take note of a reporter's notes today in one of the AP wire services, where I don't know whether the guy's a Christian. Don't know for sure. But here's his observation about these last line of storms that struck the Midwest. And by now you've probably heard about Washington, Illinois, totally devastated, just in minutes. And then we think about how, they're talking about 81 different tornadoes touched down in several states, several communities were just blitzed. And in all of that, 8 people were casualties. Now, 8 people is 8 people. But when you think of what it could have been in light of how fast the tornadoes dropped on site and swept through there in minutes, in the sovereign prerogative of God, do you know when it happened? At 11 o'clock in the morning, people were at church. Do you realize that in Washington, Illinois, not one church was damaged by the tornadoes? Not one. And I thought, wow, that brings to mind something that I have read many times over the years in these devotional journals that I read. It may be familiar to you, but every time I come across this, it makes the hair in my heart stand up. And it harkens back to, I think we're talking like in 1920, 1922, in Nova Scotia, there, was a dry spell. And these large, all-consuming fires were being swept by the winds. And they were mowing down everything in the path. And as they were heading toward this one town, one pastor went into his church and closed the door, and he began to pray. The winds of the world were about to consume his little town and his church. And he went in there and he began to pray, and he was in there praying and praying, and parishioners and friends alike were banging on the door, knocking on the window, trying to get his attention, to get him to leave. He kept on praying, and the fire kept coming closer. Then the winds picked up, and all of a sudden at a strategic point, the fire made two splits. It split right there at the town and went around it. Now, to the secular, skeptical mind, well, those things happen. Accidents do happen. But I say, I'm more inclined to believe that we have a prayerful expectation very similar, that as we look at the circumstances that wall in the church of this day and are about ready to overwhelm it, when we bring ourselves to the point where we realize that when we're so vulnerable that there's nothing more than that we can do, nothing. No more sermons, no more special programs, no more initiative on one side or the other. We now shrink into the hand of God, and we get on our knees and we begin to pray, and we leave it, everything and the outcome, into God's hands. And that's what I'd like you to do and think. You have every right as the children of God, based on what the Lord himself has said, to have specific prayerful expectations. And what I'd like you to do, I know that you frequently have folks that are sick, been in accidents, and I pray for them by all means. But I'd like to have you, if you would, pass this around on this side. Take two or three of the little sheets out of there. And what you have there are the names of the members of our church and others that are closely related. And I would like to have you take two or three of those tonight and focus on them in prayer tonight. Focus on them. I say not to pray. Don't feel inhibited about praying for anything else or anybody else. That's fine. But if you don't do anything, focus in on the names that you have. And when you're finished with them tonight at prayer meeting, would you please put them back in the tray before you leave? And I say, well, I have this person's name, but I don't know anything about them. I don't know what's ailing them or what concerns they have. Well, then, I would urge you to inquire. I would urge you to inquire. Maybe, just maybe, if our church and our sister churches will humble themselves and get on their knees, we can avoid the sweeping winds that are about to overwhelm the assemblies of our fellowship. Now, just for the record, do you have any updates or additional requests that you would like to have voiced tonight?
Well, I'd like everybody to pray for my mom and my brother.